on the 9th of June, 1862, on a summer's afternoon. I took the bus to Manbury's and she was heavy laden. Away we went along Collingwood Street, that's on the road to Bladen.
Yo, what is good? Ladies and germs, welcome to another episode of CHN Radio. This is episode, who knows? I think it's 214. I don't know. It's your boy Elijah here, and I'm joined by the co-host with the most, the illustrious man himself, Josh. Josh, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. I don't imagine that the settings would have allowed me to make the exact same link twice. So it might be 213. But sure. I'm not sure.
I don't even have. I mean, that's what the outline says. But I'm not the most trustworthy person for this, even though I've been right. So doesn't matter. Yeah, excited, Josh. How are you? Are you okay? Everything good?
Yeah, man. Busy. Like I was thinking that lower league soccer would slow down, but it's ramped up. We've got leagues that took a couple weeks off and then are starting back up again in the U.S. and indoor soccer is getting hot. So lots of lower league U.S. writing and podcasting, but ready to roll with this Newcastle United season.
Yeah. So like Josh said, we're going to talk a little bit about Newcastle's opening match, a resounding win that I think, you know what? We'll get to it. Josh and I predicted that it'd be a high-scoring, exciting game. I think that we thought it'd be a closer, high-scoring, exciting game than it actually ended up being.
Yeah.
All that to say, Newcastle started off the season with a bang. Quick reminder, just a couple quick plugs. If you aren't in the Fantasy Premier League, go ahead and join because you should be in it. I think by the time this podcast comes out, it'll be close to getting your stuff selected for this week. If it hasn't already passed, I think you have until like Friday.
Yeah, Friday, because there's a Friday match. So it just depends on when you get this out for sure. But it's never too late to join, even if you join and you don't start till week two or three. There's only currently 32 people, and so trust me on this, people will fall off. They will take a week or two off, or they'll forget for a month, and all of a sudden you'll catch up on points. Just join and get stuck in. We're gonna give away scarves and stickers.
Yeah, scarves and stickers. You heard it here first. And then don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on all the favorite platforms that you have. Make sure that we're the first, second, third, or fourth listen of your week, depending on whenever you open up your apps. And be sure to rate us 5 stars, leave a fun review or something like that. We haven't read any 5-star reviews lately, so maybe we'll start doing that again. And then the last thing is the bonus Tonali episode came out with Martino Puccio. It's a fun listen. It's a good conversation. Martino and I are good friends, all that kind of jazz. So good insight. And I feel so bad that I didn't get this out before the Tonali debut because, and we'll talk about it a little bit later, I think Martino was spot on in his assessment of how he felt Tonali would do in the Prem. He was one of the first people I heard that mentioned that Tonali was going to physically be able to handle the Premier League, which for some reason people in England didn't think that was going to be possible. So listen to it. It's in your feed. If you see this podcast, you probably will see the Tonali one. And then I will say I did notice that, like, I was like, I feel like our listens are slightly lower than they usually are, or like drastically lower than they usually are. Turns out and there was a weird drop off that made no actual sense. Turns out Mr. Elon with X doing all his weird stuff made it so that all of our auto tweets for all of the times that the podcast come out, they don't work anymore. So I will be manually tweeting out when episodes drop. I'll start doing that again. So it's going to be easier for y'all to know when an episode actually comes out instead of having to kind of like guesstimate and play the guessing game. So anyway, let's hop right into it. If you don't mind, Josh, is that okay with you?
Yeah. I could just get going with the women. It's funny. This is going to be a little bit longer and more of a preview than usual. And it was so much information that I actually reached out in Slack and I was like, hey, does anyone write about this? And you replied, you So I'm going to take all of my notes and I'm just going to turn it into what will on paper be a brief season preview by word count, but it'll be a little bit more than we usually talk about the women. Actually, I talk about them a lot, but so tickets are still available for their home match, which is this Sunday, the 20th, when they host Halifax FC at Kingston Park Stadium for a 2 p.m. local time kickoff. I don't know what that translates to directly here in Oregon. I think it's like 8 hours difference.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Yeah. But I can't find, I'm going to reach out to them and see if I can find a stream. If I find a stream or if there's a broadcast of radio or anything, I'll share it for sure. As we know, the Mags earned promotion last year up into the FA Women's Premier League North. The FAWPL is a Division III league and it is split North-South. However, just like last year, only one team can earn promotion up to the second division, which is called the Barclays Championship. And of course, the Barclays Championship gets promotion up to the Women's Super League, where all the big teams play. Last year, Coventry were relegated from the championship and are now competing as Rugby Borough this season. Which is interesting.
That doesn't make any sense. So you're going to have to explain that.
Yeah. And I'm going to look into this more, but it looks like there was a name change and I'm going to reach out to the club and find out, is it that the team Coventry gave the rights to the women's position to a different organization, or if they changed their name, or if there was some sort of other like team affiliation, because I know in our league system, my team that I run here played under one club one season, independent another season, and we're looking to unite as a B squad next year for a higher level team. So sometimes it's just who you're cutting deals with to get maybe for whatever reason. So I'll ask around. I'll find out what I can find out. But it's not the first time that's happened. So they are in the FAWPL South. So Newcastle won't be competing against that recently relegated team. However, they will both be fighting for that singular promotion spot. Forest, Wolves, and Burnley are the biggest and most dangerous clubs in our North Division. Derby are sort of the fourth biggest, and we play them in league next. Not this weekend, but in 3 weeks, because we have a cup match in between our league matches. And then we play Halifax this weekend. As I said, they changed their name over the summer from Brighouse Town to Halifax. So teams are doing this. They finished fifth last season, seventh the year before that, and they played at the same level as the Mags back in 2020-21. So the only two previous results that I could find between what was Brighouse Town, now Halifax FC, versus Newcastle United were 0-0 on October 25th, 2020, and a 0-3 loss when they knocked us out of the FA Cup on April 4th, 2021. So it's going to be maybe a bit of a revenge match, but mostly I could see these women. I think this is going to be a bigger challenge than we were sort of like euphoric at the end of last season with their promotion. But when I'm looking at the size and sort of the pedigree of the teams that are in this division, I think Newcastle are going to have their hands full. And I'm going to try to find out, because I don't see on the website, isn't very helpful by splitting up the news. So I'm just going to find out some of the players that have come in. And you know, we've spoken over the summer briefly about, you know, switching over to more a professional and sort of bringing in new players. I'm going to find out who those new players are and learn more about this team as the season goes on and try to turn that into a weekly, if not at least every other week, an article about Newcastle United women for coming home Newcastle.
Nice. And worth noting, Josh, this is just live pod planning. check out their Twitter account. Their Twitter account's usually
pretty it's good. Solid. Yes.
And honestly, it's really cool seeing that it's actually good, because I do remember when it was like an unofficial account being ran by the director of communications, and like he just was that's exciting. Moving on, we got a couple quick news stories to hit, then we'll get into this review. We're not going to spend too much time on this. This fall, St. James's Park will be hosting Saudi Arabia, the men's national team. So,
It makes sense.
Yeah, it makes
home,
sense.
Home away from home. You know, when the season is over, oftentimes these English teams tend to schedule games in warmer climates. I imagine Saudi Arabia probably wants to schedule games in cooler climates just to get away from the norm. So it makes sense.
Yeah. And, you know, and they chose a very well-known venue that's definitely known for hosting international soccer in St. James's Park. So anyway, that's happening. I do remember a time where people were screaming at me in my DMs that there's no relationship between Saudi Arabia and Newcastle. So, you know,
undeniable at this point, really.
Two years in a row of a Saudi away kit. And I think people are starting to put two and two together. Okay. All right. Enough of that. Let's get into something a little bit more exciting. Newcastle just recently made another youth signing, which is one. It's really cool that we get to talk about Newcastle making youth signings. They signed a Irish U18 player. He's 18 years old, named Cathal Heffernan. He's from Cork. He grew up in the Cork FC Academy or Cork City Academy, and then made the trip over to Milan last June. This is 22-3. So yeah, last June he joined Milan and was in the Milan Academy, and then was poached by Newcastle this summer to go back in the English system. There's a few theories as to why he did that. One, he was very much liked at Milan. Like, he was considered one of their better academy players. I should have reached out to Martino, see if he knew anything about him. But it seemed like it was a big loss to them, just based off of the reporting that I've seen. He was well liked by everyone there. They thought that he'd be a good player for the future. He is a center back, right footed, so he's likely a right footed center back. But I did see some reporting that like the youth system in Italy is slightly different than the one in the Prem. Like, you kind of, they have to kind of make a decision on you a little bit earlier. Like, I think it might be like they might not have like U23s or something like that. So it just makes sense to move to a club in England if you can, just for the sake of like, you can kind of stick around the academy longer before the club has to really make a decision on you. So anyway, I'm not expecting you to have any comments on this, because I haven't seen him play. You haven't seen him play, but
no, but I'll have something after you mention the next one that connects to both of them.
Okay. Well, no.
No, moving on.
Yeah. But okay, kind of as Josh alluded, there's actually another signing that is about to happen. Lewis Hall is allegedly joining Newcastle from Chelsea, 18-year-old left back, really highly touted left back prospect. It's kind of one that Chelsea fans are pretty upset that he's having to go, but given their spending habits, which, by the way, since we recorded a podcast talking about Caicedo and Lavia potentially going up, they both ended up signing for Chelsea. So Chelsea's midfield is now just midfield three is 280-ish million pounds. So that's
ridiculous.
You know, that's good and normal, and definitely something to look into. But yeah, anyway, Lewis Hall, you know, again, great Chelsea player, made his debut actually in a loss to Newcastle last November, made 10 appearances for Chelsea. But again, highly touted prospect there. He's an England U21, and he won Chelsea Academy Player of the Year this past season. So there was some big things in store for him this season with kind of some left backs at the club, like Cucurella being out of favor. It seemed like it was a clear path for him to get some more playing time. He was more effective than Cucurella, and it seemed as if Chelsea were trying to offload Cucurella potentially to Newcastle. And it looked like Lewis Hall was either going to stay at Chelsea or potentially go on loan somewhere. Crystal Palace was interested, and you can kind of look into or make your own assumptions on Crystal Palace and Chelsea's relationship after Chelsea tried to sign one of their players who then signed an extension at Crystal Palace. So you can look into that if you want to, but that's neither here nor there. I think the big news is that Newcastle have brought in their second highly touted academy prospect that is Premier League ready this offseason with Livermento and now Lewis Hall. Ironically, or maybe not ironically, and maybe even not surprisingly, both are Chelsea Academy products. I have a feeling I know where you're going, Josh, but I'd love to kind of hear your thoughts on this.
Well, you know, I was just thinking, and I could be wrong, not have thought about it. The young one that came from Milan, I think he's from Ireland, and so that does not... That won't count as a home as a home nation or home
homegrown or whatever for homegrown.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. And so I know that when it comes to the difference between Cucurella and and if they could choose an English international, you're going to try to stock up on get as many young English players as you can at the cheapest price available, because down the stretch as we sign more internationals like. Isak and Tonali, we want to make sure that there's a balance of English players. And if we could get them on the budget that we can get them now, and we've said, we said this last week, make the deal you could make, right? And those are the deals that they could make this year. And so I've seen some discontent. They're like, well, didn't we need this or didn't we need that? Why do we need another player if we've already got a player? Well, it's just thinking two steps ahead, and it's really, you have to commend the way that this organization is being run now, that they're even thinking ahead instead of reacting to loan moves for Shahoudry or something, like we're getting
the end on loan
we're getting players that are identified positions of need while we're waiting for the stars that are in those positions to transition away. And it's just the foresight that goes into that. So, yeah, it was just my thoughts were just it's a matter of balance of time and nationality, really, because of the rules that can kind of go in and out of Champions League and maybe homegrown stuff. So,
yeah. And on the rules note, it is worth noting that Livermento and Lewis Hall, because they're under the age of 21, won't count against Newcastle's Premier League squad list as well. So that's something worth noting. They will, you don't have to, you're not burning a spot with those guys. Worth noting as well, the other left backs that Newcastle were looking at potentially was Kieran Tierney in on loan or Cucurella in on loan. I'm not going to lie, like Cucurella one is not very good. Well, he was good at Brighton, was not good last year at Chelsea, and you can make whatever assumptions.
Last year at Chelsea.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. You can make whatever assumptions you want. Is that Chelsea? Is that him? Who knows? Would he be better under Howe? Doesn't matter because we don't have to pay for him. Chelsea are also in a very interesting spot, as we mentioned, where they need to offload players. So I do think and get as much profit as they possibly can. So trying to get Lewis all in for £28 million plus some add-ons, that's more profit. That's actually a good deal. Profit for Chelsea. Which is good for them, even though they're losing a player that, obviously is important to them. But any actual purchase for Cucurella would not have been profit for Chelsea. So that's worth noting as well on their end. But again, it's good. We'll probably have some more on Lewis Hall once everything's official, quotes, all that kind of jazz. But for now, just be happy that it happens. I would suspect this might be one of the last signings for Newcastle. Barring anything outrageous like what happened last summer where Isak just kind of became available at the right price, I could see Newcastle doing something like that again. They have still a little bit of the flexibility, but they'll need some players out. And speaking of players going out, it's a little BS meter. Ryan Fraser might be the next Newcastle player to leave. He was linked to Celtic. I kind of want to know, Josh, how plausible is this in your opinion?
I don't know why he's not gone already. It's entirely
probably,
plausible.
Well, wages is probably the big thing. That's Chelsea's issue as well. Is nobody wants Cucurella at, you know, 110K a week, you know?
Isn't that like, wouldn't that be partially dependent upon Frazier's interest in playing? So if he was saying, yeah, you know what, let me play, maybe wouldn't Newcastle, couldn't they mutually agree to terminate his contract and then he could sign for free?
And I know there's some stress, but that doesn't help financial fair play-wise, but it does
because it gets him off the books.
But it's a net zero because you brought him in for free and then you're letting him go for free. And so, yeah, like your wage spend goes down. Mm-hmm. But in that same vein, if a team like Celtic comes in and they say, we'll give you £5 million for Ryan Fraser, But if the wages are the issue,
like if he has a contract that stipulates he has to take a certain wage, then the only way to get around the wage issue is to terminate the contract so he can sign a new contract and sort of start fresh at a lower wage.
It's not that as well. It's like, cause it's both ways. Right. So I take it like this, say you make $80,000 a year, you know, you're low performing, but you're kind of still doing your job and the company they don't want to terminate you because they've invested time and effort into you or whatever. Another company comes along and they say, all right, we'll offer you, you know, $50,000 to do your job, to actually do your job. What are you taking as the player? Like, are you going to take a $30,000 pay cut to then have to do more?
It's different though. Like it's apples and oranges. It's apples and oranges,
but this has already happened at Newcastle multiple times. Jack Colbeck spent 3 years in the U23s for this very reason of like, he was getting paid 60K a week. And part of it is like the teams that want him can't afford him. I'm sure there's a dozen teams in the championship that would take Ryan Fraser right now.
But they literally
can't afford him or afford his wages. And it's still up to the player. And if the player feels that they're worth $50,000 a week and they don't want to take less than that because they know they can still get $50,000 a week sitting at Newcastle and doing nothing, there is literally no mutual termination that's coming there of that contract.
I hear you.
Because
mutual termination
means that the player is also saying, I'm fine no longer making $50,000 a week and I'm going to take a pay cut. And if they were willing to take a pay cut, they would have already taken the pay cut and gone elsewhere.
I hear you. But here's the part that's different. That's if you're an engineer, right?
I'm now speaking in what has happened at Newcastle.
But if you're a footballer, if you're an ambitious footballer, Jack Colbeck wasn't an ambitious footballer.
What about Ryan Fraser says he's ambitious though? Like we start the conversation right there. You're talking about a guy who didn't finish out the season when his team was getting relegated. That's ambitious.
I don't know.
A guy who willingly sat out half a season, didn't even fight for a spot that was wide open on the left wing side. His position, he complains that he doesn't get to play all that often because of Alan St. Maximin, because of Jacob Murphy, because of Miguel Amaro. Alan St. Maximin's injured half of last season, doesn't look that good. Yeah. That spot's wide open. It's so open that Joe Willock and Joe Ellington are playing at that spot. And he's not even fighting for it. Like, that's ambition. Like, I understand what you're saying. And correct. For players who actually are ambitious, they'll move and they'll take the pay cut. Like, look at Christian Pulisic. Right. Like, he took the pay cut. He took the move. He went to Milan. But Ryan Fraser's not ambitious, and that's the issue, is that he's not ambitious. He doesn't – like, it's just a completely different situation. And there are players. Like, Jamal Lewis has looked elsewhere, you know. Like, there are guys who are fine making the move, but he's not. And, you know, Celtic – is probably appealing enough. They can probably get close enough to his wages. It's definitely an easier scenario for him where he's probably going to walk into the first team and play more often. And he doesn't have to have the pressure of being in the Prem, but yeah,
that really might be a dream move for him too. You know, he's a Scottish international, and he might really appreciate.
Yeah, you know, it's just silly. It's like you're going to always have this, and like you know, it was frustrating. You know, when it was Jack Cole back, but I'm not even like super frustrated now because I get it. Like I get it. You got to chase your bag. Like I'm a big fan of bag chasing. Like go ahead and get your money, get paid. So I can't even really be mad at him. It's like that's the kind of player. It's like I know that's the kind of player you are, and I think kind of my last thoughts on this is that I think that as normal people we look at like professional athletics. And we see like all these guys and everyone expects like every player in the league or in any league to give 100% and to like care and be passionate. And it's just not the case. And it doesn't matter the sport. Like I think a good example of this is one of my favorite basketball players, this guy, Jeff Teague, who was on the Hawks. And it was really frustrating as a Hawks fan because towards the end of his tenure, he like wasn't trying. Like the Hawks had drafted a younger point guard. It was like, Jeff Teague, we still need you to be a part of the team. And it was very evident that he wasn't trying. And it wasn't like super evident that he wasn't trying. It was just like his level of play fell off dramatically. He's now got a podcast and he's literally talking about the time. And like once they drafted in another point guard, he was like, yeah, I'm done. Like I've made my money. Like I don't really care about playing here anymore. So I'm not going to try. Like, and even towards the end of his career, he won a championship, and it's a very famous quote. He was like, he didn't do anything on that team. He just was there. He took the deal because he was, again, he's like, while they're still going to pay me, I might as well get paid. And he was like, I felt like I won a championship on a group project. And it's like, I think we forget that it's still a job to these guys, even though it's not, it seems like a dream job for all of us. But to them, it's still a job. And like in a day-to-day job, we all have been at jobs where we're like, I'm not trying to improve at this role. Like I'm going to do it because I'm being paid to do it. And I'm going to do enough to not get fired. But they're not getting that much more out of me. And like that's the reality of for footballers, for professional athletes as well.
You could be right. You could be right.
I mean, I don't know. I know a couple guys. I got some inside sources.
You don't lack conviction, that's for sure.
Yeah. All right, you got anything else on
No, I just hope he goes.
Brian Frazier.
No, I'm done with him. Get him off. Go away.
Yeah. I mean, I hope it doesn't turn into another Jack Colback thing where it's just like you just see the picture of him in like U23 training and just not doing anything.
No, look, it sounds harsh, but listen, if you're on this team, this is no longer a team where we're desperate for bodies. This is a team where we're moving on and we're looking towards the future. And if a kid like Harrison Ashby has to take a loan to get some playing time, you know, Frazier, you could go take a loan. I don't know what it is. Go play football somewhere. Don't just sit around and take a paycheck.
Yeah, but 50K a week to sit there and do nothing. That does sound nice. Not gonna
lie. It's a lot of dough. Yeah, that's for sure.
It's a lot of dough. All right. That's it for news. Let's move on to a lighter subject in which Josh and I are probably gonna agree on pretty much everything. Newcastle are actually right now as we stand, top of the table. How does it feel? Yep. Stop the
count.
End
the vote. Yeah, stop the count.
End of vote. Stop the count. Newcastle are top of the table with Brighton in second and Man City in
fake
third.
Fake news.
fake news. So, Newcastle were the highest scoring team of last week with a 5-1 win over Aston Villa. Just a match that, like I said earlier, I think we all thought was going to be a little bit closer. I had said that I was looking forward to the rivalry. And it was fun in the first half. It felt like it was going to be that way. And then things just fell apart for Aston Villa in a number of ways. So I forgot to do a three words tweet. So hand up, my bad. So that sucks for me. But Josh, do you have three words to describe this win?
Oh, what a ride. Like that?
Yeah, that was good? Pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good. Mean, like you said, we predicted goals. I think we both said 3-2. Am I wrong?
Yeah.
We both
said 3-2.
And it was almost there. Like, there were lots of opportunities, I think, for Villa. I think the score doesn't flatter them, or it doesn't necessarily reflect the effort that they put in the first half. And it was a lot closer, I think, for a large portion of the match than the score tells us. But
for sure.
at the same time, for all the opportunities that they had, I never felt that there was jeopardy. Does that make sense? Like, I was never worried.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
I was worried about this going into it. And then as soon as it got up and running, I was like, oh, wow. Like, wow. Okay. Newcastle isn't a so-so team. They're good. And I think that even the most cynical and old school of fans, like, you know, myself and guys that are even older, like, it's going to take us a while to look at Newcastle and be like, no, actually, this isn't a dream that we're dreaming. Pinch me. Like, this is real. This team is legit dangerous and good. And you can wake up on a Saturday morning and you can have hope. It's the hope that kills you sometimes. But you don't wake up like dreading the result. You wake up looking forward to the result. And that is a significant change over my mindset of the last 30 years.
Yeah. And we're in a good spot where we're at the time period as fans where we're enjoying it. And we're not like my friend who's a Manchester United fan who sent a lot of explicit stories, you know, or, you know, it implied some explicitives in their performance and their 1-0 win over Wolves, where there's just like a frustration. And I will say, like, it's going to be ebbs and flows. But again, right now, everything's cooking until we get found out and all that kind of jazz. So I'm going to quickly run through the lineups. There are no real surprises on either side. I think probably the only question for Newcastle was who's going to start out left. Everything else kind of felt set in stone. So we'll start with Newcastle's lineup. Pope and goal, Trippier, Scher, Botman, Byrne as the back line, Tonali, Bruno, and Joelinton as the midfield three, Miggy, Alexander Isak, and Anthony Gordon up as your three in attack in a 4-3-3. And then hasn't Villa went with like kind of a 4-4-2 sort of situation with Emi Martinez in goal, Matty Cash, Ezri Konsa, Tyrone Mings, and Luca Dean, I don't know how to say his name actually, as their back line, who did not realize that Mings is 30 years old. It feels like he looks so young, and I feel like he's always been this young up and coming English center back, and he like finally kind of was in the picture for England. But yeah, he's 30. Like, it's insane. Okay, anyway, Leon Bailey started out wide for them with one of my favorite FIFA legends, Boubacar Kamara, in the midfield alongside Douglas Luiz, and then John McGinn wearing the captain's armband, a mainstay for Villa. And then new signing, Moussa Diaby, played as a center forward alongside Ollie Watkins, which is interesting because Diaby is mostly a winger, so it was interesting seeing him make some of those central runs. But yeah, this was a exciting match, like we said, from start to finish. And literally from start to finish, the match started off with a bang. 9th minute goal from Sandro Tonali. Debut goal. You couldn't ask for anything better if you're Tonali, which is really cool. I'm just going to run through all the goals and stuff, and then we can talk about specific things.
Okay.
Just in the interest of time and moving it along.
Sure, yeah.
Diaby scored literally 2 minutes later, and that's where you're like, oh, this could be a fun one. His was a ball that was crossed into him, and he hit it on the volley. So two debut goals back-to-back. By the way, Anthony Gordon had the assist on the first one. And then we had a set piece where it was like a nice little routine where we kind of got to see a little bit of the Tonali set piece magic because he's also a set piece guy. Him and Trippier set up Botman, who nodded across for Isak to score 2-1. And then there was a lot of chances. Diaby had an opportunity to score. And then in the 26th minute, Isak and Tyrone Mings collided and Mings got stretchered off, which is not fun to see if you know Tyrone Mings and his injury history. That's kind of where things started to go downhill for Villa. They brought on Pau Torres, who actually is a really good player. But I think at this point, there was a lot of chances from Newcastle. And Villa were getting some opportunities on the counter as well. But this is kind of the common theme, in my opinion, where Villa continued. They lost one of their most organized and they're one of their better defenders and certainly the kind of one of the organizers of the back line. And Emery plays this high line that requires a lot of communication and organization. And so when you change any part of that back line, typically teams will drop back a little bit or make some sort of defensive adjustment, especially if in the beginning of the season, especially with a newer player. And it's, again, this was not really on Pau Torres. I just think at a certain point, that's when Emery should have abandoned the high line. He did not. And so there was 10 minutes of extra time, and it felt like Newcastle were going to score in that 10 minutes of extra time. They didn't. Halftime, go in, and then basically right out of the half, Newcastle score, Isak scores, and that's kind of when the floodgates open. Isak scored, didn't have a chance for a hat trick. He got subbed off. Callum Wilson came on. Anthony Gordon got subbed off, and Harvey Barnes came on. Wilson scored off a, I think it was off a, yeah, it was off a Barnes assist. And then to close things out, Barnes ended up scoring at the end of the match with a Jacob Murphy assist. So all in all, Newcastle scored 5 goals. Isak with the brace. Callum Wilson gets his Premier League season started with goals, and then Harvey Barnes and Sandro Tonali get debut goals. Josh, you can give me your overall thoughts. You can give me a moment in the match. I just want to hear.
I think the new guys were very impressive. I know that you spoke about Tonali's first goal or his debut goal, but it was just minutes later in the 7th or 8th minute he had another chance on goal. You know, and he just put in. He's graceful, but he's physical, if that makes sense. He's like a Mack truck that can move. I don't know.
It's Sean Longstaff and like
with
it's
a,
like
with
Sean
gravity.
Longstaff. Yeah, it's like Sean Longstaff and like the qualities. Oh, I wouldn't even say Joe Willock. I'm trying to it's like maybe like a Sean Longstaff and Kieran Trippier combined, where it's like there's this class that's on the ball. And there's like does all the right things offensively, like always a threat with the ball at his feet, but also just not afraid to get stuck in, not afraid to get super physical at all. And that was really cool to see. I mean, just dream debut for him. It looked like he'd been playing the Prem for forever. And worth noting, this is like the 3rd or 4th signing where like, you know, shout out to the recruitment team. Botman was like this. Bruno was pretty similar to this, even though Eddie kind of eased him into it. And Isak was similar to this, where they started playing, and it did not look like it was the first time they played in the Prem. So shout out to Eddie Howe and his preparations for all that. Yeah, Josh, you've been pretty wrong on all the guys coming in.
Well, just because it's this traditional, it's this mindset that it's going to take time to get used to the speed and the physicality of the league. And I was just thinking about this today, actually, how wrong I am. And it really makes you think that I don't think that I will second guess another recruit that Eddie Howe has his, you know, the finger on the pulse on, because they know what they're looking for in a player. And even though it might not be the big name that you and I might be aware of.
Yeah.
When they say they're bringing somebody in and you know it's a done deal, you really have to just accept, just come to terms with it, because they haven't had a dud yet, have they? I'm impressed with Tonali. I was expecting him to take a year, honestly, half a year to really be successful. And to be honest with you, I still feel like we're a year away from seeing the very best of him. And if this is him not at his very best, you just wait. You wait till he makes this league his bitch, and he will.
Case in point is Isak, where like, remember, Isak came in, he had a great debut, and then he got injured during international duty, and like comes back and hits the ground running. Scores 10 goals. And again, like, it's just my friends were like, oh my gosh, Isak's so the goal. I was like, yeah, you have to remember he got double digit goals and he played 2/3 of the season. Like, he missed a third of the season and got double digit goals. Like, he is good. And like, it's just, he looked like, I mean, and I'm not going to get ahead of myself, but there was a lot of talk, especially with the big names like Harry Kane being gone, Bobby Firmino, you know, Mo Salah, like, I don't know if you want to call him a striker or whatever, but there's a lot of talk like that I've started to see online, a lot of talking points, but like people asking the question, is Isak the second best striker in the Premier League? And I'm drinking the Kool-Aid a little bit hesitantly, because, and mainly because like the other big teams, I mean, Jesus, I think, is probably, in my opinion, probably still the, you know, the guy behind Haaland. But like, if you think about it, like if you look at the rest of the really good teams in the league, Chelsea still don't have a striker. Man U doesn't have a striker. Liverpool, they've got Darwin Nunez. It's still a question mark. Man U, like I think I already said, they don't have a striker. Spurs just sold Harry Kane. So it's like you look around at the teams that are the best teams in the league, and, you know, Mitrovic is potentially on his way out to Saudi Arabia. So it's like you look around and it's like, oh, yeah, Ivan Toney, yeah, he's not playing this season or for half of the season. And you're like, oh, yeah, Isak might actually be a top three striker in the Prem. And I mean, I think, like you said, that year of him being here and then coming out of it and seeing how much better he is and how much more effective he was, he just looked more confident, and the ability was already there. And now the confidence is paired with the ability. Yeah, it's insane.
That chip shot, that's not something that somebody who would second guess himself doesn't take that shot. A guy who's living in the moment, he's in the moment. He's just shooting because he knows he can do it. He's not even thinking about it. He's just doing it.
I think the wild part about that is that he was doing stuff like in spurts like that last season. We're like, oh man, this guy's really good. And now it's like, okay, well, are we about to see that consistently from him? Because if we are, I might need to put a futures on Isak 20 plus goals. But like real quick, my quick thoughts and kind of in response to what you just said, I do think part of it is the full offseason. Like, getting Tonali in early, I think, was crucial. If you look at just like Botman was kind of the same. He got in early, and as soon as he was able to play in the Prem, like he was undroppable. And I think the full preseason underneath Eddie Howe's regimen, underneath the training camp that the team has gone through, which by all accounts the NBC guys were following the team the entire offseason in America, and they were like, this, they were, out of all the teams that they saw, Newcastle were the ones that were the most prepared. They were the ones that were training the hardest. They were training as if every training was a match. Like, so it, I think that makes a big difference, where like the physicality is being brought to Tonali in training. Like, he's not, it's not a surprise. Like, he's going up against Joe Ellington. He's going up against Sean Longstaff in training. He's going up against Bruno. And they're all physical players. And so, you know, that's exciting and good to see. And you see, like, Anthony Gordon's a good example of, like, he came in midseason, wasn't that effective. But, again, and not even, like, the full offseason with Newcastle, but has looked really good. I think you hit the nail on. And I think the only thing I would add to that is that I trust the recruitment, because they're recruiting for this system that – Eddie wants to run and that he thinks is going to be successful. And he, it just feels like whatever they're doing, like every time they bring in a player that's either not, you know, not a player that's about to enter their prime, let's give him that, and not like a Livermento or a Lewis Hall, who are clearly going to be backups and guys for the future, and, you know, they'll play here and there and all that kind of jazz. But it's clear that these guys fit the system and upgrade the current personnel. Like, you look at that match and it was like, oh yeah, that was the same Newcastle we saw beat Villa at St. James's last season, but all of the players are just better. Like, oh yeah, no, Isak's really good in that number nine role. And then it's like Anthony Gordon and then Harvey Barnes. Like, you can see exactly what Eddie Howe wanted out of that winger spot that ASM just couldn't provide. You saw it in action. And with both of them getting assists, and then Harvey Barnes also scoring, it's like, oh, so this is what this is supposed to look like. And, you know, Tonali is the same thing. It's like he's doing the stuff Sean Longstaff was doing, But just instead more. instead of it being a miss, oh no, he scores. Oh, okay. Yeah. So that's why we're scoring more goals. So it's exciting. It's fun. I don't know.
I'll just add one last thing. Harvey Barnes was on for 22 minutes.
Yeah.
Was it?
I was surprised he didn't start. I thought he was going to start just because.
I thought so too. Like, I started him in my fantasy team and still ended up getting a good return. I had him, Trippier, and Isak on my fantasy team and got great returns from them. And I also had Haaland on and triple captained him in my first week. So I got a bunch of points, right? But I thought Harvey Barnes was going to start this match. And in the 22 minutes that I did get from him as a fantasy player, I got more of a return from one player in 22 minutes than I would have from ASM in a whole match in terms of fantasy points, you know, that I did last year. So, in terms of just performance, the visibly seeing what that position is supposed to play out in Eddie Howe's system, but also just seeing what, putting your head up instead of putting your nose down looking where your teammates are, because he would have had, I think, a second assist. But what was it, his assist that Callum Wilson like fluffed a little bit over?
I think that was him, because Anthony Gordon, I think, got taken off for him. Like I think him and Wilson came on around the same time. Yeah,
interchangeable. It's pretty.
It was insane and that was like, it's just cool to, I mean, and I'll close and talk a little bit about that. But I mean, it is wild that like the bench is getting respect. Like you heard, they had the three team pundit for NBC, which that was exciting. Also, shout out to it's good for us of folks who don't have cable, but seems like NBC is just pivoting to having everything on Peacock, which that's great for me and Josh. They were just talking about it. It's like, it's insane, how deep this Newcastle squad is, because Villa are deep as well. I mean, they brought on Tielemans, which, you know, sure, good for them. But it's like, okay, well, Newcastle, like, you just took off a guy who has a brace, and then the guy who assisted him. And now you're bringing on a guy who last season had, 13 goals and 10 assists or something. They had some ridiculous number of goals and assists last season. He's the backup. And you bring on the guy who was the leading scorer for Newcastle last season, who scored 8 goals in a month. And it's like, oh, this is what it's like to have a deep team. Cool.
This is the depth that we were looking for last year. And we said this a year ago. It's going to take a year. Well, here we are. Soak it up. Love it.
Soak it up.
Yep.
Yeah. You could give gold stars to everyone in the team. But if you could pick one player that impressed you, doesn't need to be the best player, just a player who impressed you.
I literally wrote this, and you can see it is Tonali, too easy.
Oh yeah.
I know for the five goals and for all of the words of positive note and energy that we have for the offense, I think it was, to me, it was Botman who I think he made one mistake and they paid for it. But honestly, like, he's superb. He's so good. You don't notice him being good. You don't see the defense scrambling because he's already taking care of it before they have to scramble. He's a step ahead of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Good for him. That's honestly, that's how I judged how good Dan Byrne's been. Cause like if I'm noticing Dan Byrne especially as a left back, I'm like, oh, this is probably not the best game for him. But he was pretty unnoticeable given the assignment that he had as well. For me, I'm going to go with Anthony Gordon again. Like this does not mean that I think Anthony Gordon is better than everyone, but I think it is really just like night and day from the Anthony Gordon we saw last season. Oh, you know, towards the end of the year, and he scored that goal, it was like, okay, cool. But he looked at home in that system. He looked like all of the qualities that we talked about last January that we were excited to see, we saw it.
His passing, his through balls, oh my gosh, almighty. Like I said, I'm looking forward to watching them play. I'm not dreading it anymore.
And I'm excited because I do think that, like, just like Jacob Murphy and Almiron were just pushing each other and like both were just consistent. Like Jacob Murphy came in and I think he got an assist. Yeah, he got an assist on the last goal. Like, like those, that competition down the right hand side keeps it, so it makes it so it doesn't get stale. And that's good. And everyone's pushing each other. And that's Eddie Howe in a nutshell. That's what he wants. So it's good. It was just fun to see. And I'll close on this is just the national attention. Again, it's week one. Everyone's overreacting. And I mean, depending on how things go this week, it could be a lot of overreactions as well. When you look at how unimpressive Chelsea was and like Liverpool and Manchester United, and some of that's not even their own, like some of that's just who they played and the style that, you know, the teams that played them want to play. And Spurs, you know, tying with Brentford. The only other team to talk about this weekend, especially with Man City of being the first match, was Newcastle. And we're talking about like a ton of the national media being all in and drinking the Newcastle Kool-Aid. Because I think like to open up the season with that dominant performance and like the most lopsided match against another team that people like kind of had looped you in the same category with, it's a statement win, which is weird to say this early on in the season, but you have to remember like, and again, we're guilty of this as well. Not even guilty. It's just, we assumed that Villa and Newcastle were going to be around the same level. Both teams kind of pushing for that European spot, maybe that final European spot, because both were, you know, putting up similar results, both had exciting managers and all that kind of jazz. And like, we thought this was going to be close, and it just wasn't. Like, and it was relentless. Like, that game easily, and I mean easily, like, we're talking Wilson fluffed an easy one. Isak fluffed his the third for hat-trick. At a minimum, you're talking about 7-1.
Yeah.
Against a team that's still likely going to be fighting for Europe. Like, that's insane.
Yeah, I think so. I think I wonder if it's too early to worry for Villa. I think Unai Emery is a really good coach, and he'll figure out how to reset this team, but no Buendia and no Mings. And I still feel that
Mings is a net positive, in my opinion, but that's neither here nor there.
He's a big part of their defensive setup, so at the very least, it's going to take them a couple of weeks to readjust and get, you know, to figure out who the leader of the line is there. I would also worry for Villa if anything happened to Ollie Watkins, because I just still don't feel like they have any depth at the forward
Diaby,
position.
I think Diaby, like,
but wasn't he playing more of a winger? Well, he was playing a second striker,
and he was making some dangerous runs earlier.
Yeah,
I think they'll be fine. I do. I think, like you said, they seem less like they, which makes sense. They've spent less. They're less deep than Newcastle. It feels like Newcastle of last year, where, you know, when Newcastle didn't have Isak or Wilson, like, it was very evident that they were going to struggle, but they could still get the job done. And that's how I feel about Villa. I would agree with you. I think they'll be fine. I do think, like, for this, I thought it was baffling. Emery didn't really make the adjustment. I think, I don't know if he was trying to make some sort of statement to his guys or whatever, but like, he played the high line just way too long.
Well, way too, you know, like, I think like someone pointed out
3-1 would have been fair as a result, but like it got ugly because he kept playing the high line till the very end.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting when you look at the way they lined up on Google, right? It'll show you one formation, like a 4-4-2. But if you look at the way that the broadcast tell you that they were lined up, it was more of like, I lost it here. It was slightly, it was a 4-4-2, but they said, what did they say? That the inside midfielders were going to play deeper, like ridiculously deep.
Yeah, like a 4-2-2-2. Like
and they're going to try
CDMs.
Yeah,
which makes
the idea was to try to suck you in.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then they were going to try to spring on the counter, right? But the problem is, if you're going to play the counter and you're going to turn around and try to play a press high line like that, you know, you're really setting yourself up. It's really dangerous. And
you're either going to score a lot or get scored on a lot. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, so yeah, that's exciting and all that jazz. All right, let's move into, I low-key might split this up into two parts. Who knows? We'll see. I'm curious to see how it'll perform if I do that. Okay, all right. Man City coming up this weekend.
Yes.
Should be a fun one. Should be an interesting one. like Man City, it's weird. They're still Man City, but I think there's been like it's been a very
Do you feel they're vulnerable? Do you feel they're vulnerable?
Oh yeah, that's what I was gonna say. They feel vulnerable right now. They've obviously played more competitive matches than everyone. Mm-hmm. They had the Community Shield in which they looked fine. De Bruyne left injured, which that's a big talking point for this. And then of course they looked they got the job done. But it wasn't the Man City that we were used to, the Man City we saw at the end of last season. It was more like the Man City that was like sort of the beginning of the season last season as well, where it kind of was a slower start and, you know, they were off the pace and not really competing for first until, you know, midway through last season. It felt like that where, all right, you could still – like you could go. It's not out of the norm for a mid-table team to draw with.
I don't know. I can't remember if I said this last week, but I might have when we sort of talked about the games that Newcastle had to open up the season, and we were like, you know, a lot of people were dreading the opening fixtures. And my way of looking at it was, you've got to play all of these teams twice. Right. Oh, yeah. And you might as well, honestly, you might as well play the biggest ones first. Let's get these out of the way. Bring on City now. I want City this week. I don't want City next month. By next month, they've got whatever, if one or two replacements they might bring in between now and the end of the deadline day. Maybe they don't bring any.
They've got Doku. But, they've got, Takeda, all that kind of stuff. Like,
they create momentum. Once they create momentum and they have additional depth, that's not when you want to play them. You want to play them now when their minds are full of all the things that it's kind of like, you know, they've just got so much on their minds right now. There's no better time. And so
this happens. And like, if you're looking again, you know me, I'm going to bring in other leagues like NBA's like this, where like there are certain teams that kind of like, they don't turn it on until a certain point of the season, because they know in order, like the Warriors of recent are like this, where like they know that once they get into the playoffs, it's business time, and like they'll perform when they need to. And that's kind of how I feel Man City are, of like this group in particular has won the league so many times that like you saw it last season where like, all right, like they were, again, kind of same boat as they are now, where they were still vulnerable. And clearly the focus was like, we're going to perform in Champions League and all that kind of that, all that good stuff. And it got to a certain point where Arsenal kind of started to slip away, and then Man City pounced and did not lose for the rest of the season. Like, so I feel like that mentality is still there, where it's not that they're like not motivated in a sense, but like this team knows that these first few fixtures don't matter as much as, you know, we think they do. Like they might be turned off a little bit by these, or maybe not all the way there. And like you said, there's going to be the momentum part, where Newcastle have started off with like a clear goal in mind of like, they want to start off strong. I don't even know if they think, like, I don't know if they think they can win the league. I don't know what their whole mindset is, but it seems like the two teams are at opposite mentalities for this. Before we get into the actual like injuries and do our little quick preview, I do want to mention that I will be watching this with the Shades of Blue guys. So Josh, you're invited to that if you want to as well, but I don't know what you're doing. But yeah, we're going to be live streaming this. Kind of like they're doing like a watch along. So I've never done this before.
What platform are you using?
Josh.
We'll wait and see.
I have no idea. I'm going to ask them tonight after this podcast. I don't know how it works, but I know that I'm going to be on it. And I'm going to be like, hey, I might send this link to Josh as well. And they'll be like, okay, cool. But those guys are really cool. It's a black Man City podcast. So
we'll all fit in.
Yeah, you'll fit in for sure. So, yeah, they're good guys. So, you know, if you want to, I don't know if our listeners are super into streaming, but if you want to hop in on that, I'll, of course, still be tweeting and all that good stuff. We'll see. But anyway, let's hop into it. Couple quick notes. You know, these are usually quicker because it's the beginning of the season. For Newcastle, not a lot of injuries. Emil Kraft is injured, obviously, and Joe Willock is still not fully healthy. Everyone else is fine for us. Bernardo Silva for Man City apparently has some sort of illness. Zach Steffen is still out with an injury. And then De Bruyne, we mentioned as well, he's got a hamstring injury that's actually been confirmed. It's going to take him out through December. So as we talk about fantasy, I know he's a very popular fantasy pick. I don't know if people, if you weren't paying attention, people might have picked him up in fantasy because he was injured before the season started. So I don't really
know. They'll find out in a couple hours when they make their their last minute transfers.
Yeah. Like if you hadn't already not put him in, then you should probably get on that. Anyway, yeah. So that's it for Man City. They've got everyone else in. They've brought in a few guys as well into the squad, most notably Garvidal, Yasuo Garvidal from Leipzig, who is he's looked okay so far, not great. Doesn't look like he's going to really take Ake's spot, but again, it's whatever. And then also Mateo Kovacic, who's also been fine, not again, not great. Neither one of them have looked super great so far, but you know, again, that's kind of why you want to play them now, before they're really ingrained into Pep's system, Pep's philosophy, all that kind of stuff. And worth noting that they lost Mahrez. They lost Mahrez to what's his face, Saudi Arabia. Which you know, there you go. That's kind of the biggest. And then they lost Ben Mendy, who I'm not going to get into that, but he's gone. He didn't really play much, but you know, he's gone. And then Gundogan as well. He's at Barca. So they've lost. And oh, and I forgot about Cancelo is at Bayern. But yeah, they lost a few players. They haven't really replaced
leaders.
Yeah, leaders. And they haven't really replaced them like for like. Mahrez is probably the one that's most prominent where there's just like, oh, we haven't really replaced Mahrez. And he was very good for them. But again, they're Man City. So they're incredibly deep. It's not super concerning. They've still got Grealish, Foden, Julian Alvarez. They've got Erling Haaland. They got Perón. Cole Palmer looks good for them. Rodri, you know, it's, whatever. All right, let's get into the fun stuff. Josh,
I got some stuff. I got some notes.
Yeah.
They last week they had 66% possession away at Burnley. Haaland had his first half brace, and they only gave up 6 shots and 1 on target all match. They were playing Burnley at home. Of course, Burnley just promoted, not necessarily the team that was going to put up the biggest fight against the champions. But there were moments that Burnley broke through City's 3-man back line. So they play what looked like a 3-4-3, or sometimes it was like a 5-2-3.
I can hop into that real quick if you want to. Pep has a box midfield that he was experimenting with last season that created like basically 2 open central midfielders because of how they set up. And if you got the ball to them, like they could play through the middle, which is obviously like kind of ideal for a different reason we'll get into. He's now, this so far this season, has turned the goalkeeper into essentially an outfield player. This is super nerdy and super meta. So like you'll see in their buildup, what it creates is that like now you can lose one center back, and one center back can essentially drift all the way out wide, and then you've got your right back and then your other center back and then your keeper as this like really stretched out back
like
line.
A libero. Yeah. He's like playing that free-flowing libero, but he can come back and use his hands in the box. That is freaking wild.
It's insane because now instead of like initially with their box midfield, there would always be like kind of an additional man that was unaccounted for because they're overloading. They made a 4-3 matchup in the midfield. Now it's like a 5-3. So there's always like 2 open people, like either because you can't stretch your defense that far wide, and then you'll leave the 2 guys in the midfield open. So you have to account for those guys out wide. And if you do that, you just leave the center back and the keeper, who are essentially operating as like center backs in this offense, like almost unmarked with no pressure. So then they can pick out a pass anywhere they want on the pitch, and there's no pressure on the ball for them. And they're always going to be available for a reset. So good luck.
What I did see though from that was Burnley, they were able to, every once in a while there was a mistake that City would make on the ball.
And, yeah.
And they would spring an attack.
Early, yep.
And I think that Burnley did. They played a high, they played a two man press, so they were always two men to the ball. And they would wiggle that ball free every once in a while. They just weren't proficient enough in front of goal. They could not finish the opportunities that they had sprung out of that press. And I feel like Newcastle presses probably one of the best pressing teams in the league. And anyone's going to be able to break, to not only create those chances that Burnley could create, but a team that is actually like able to be proficient enough in front of goal and finish them, it's Newcastle. And so I don't know if City changes what they were doing to accommodate to, you know, and Pep's smart, he'll know that that is coming. But it's also early in the season. Have they trained enough on multiple systems that they can change it for one match because they're playing against a team? You know, I don't think that he changes it. I think that he I don't think so either. And he's also Pep. He's confident, right? He doesn't change things until a final. then he changes things when he shouldn't.
Yeah. And also, I think he knows that it's like that the only thing beating that system right now is Man City. Like, there's not been a team that's actually been able to successfully like destroy the system as a whole. And there's still some experimenting and tweaks that he's been doing. Mm-hmm. The things that have looked bad for Man City has frankly been the players. Like, I think there's still some struggling in the transition from offense to defense when you include that keeper there, and like, oh, you turn the ball over, like everyone's got, you've got to now like basically you got to counter press a little bit, and then the back line has to readjust and not reinvent themselves, but get back into a decent shape to defend. So there's still some transition stuff that they're working on that, again, like the mistakes, that's kind of what you want if you're Newcastle this early in the season, is a team that's going to be making mistakes. And that's kind of what happened with Villa. Again, like, they kept trying to play that high line, which I think will be effective for them this season, but they didn't alienate from it, even though like Newcastle exploited it and saw every mistake, they, you know, caught every little error, any random guy that you thought would have been offside. There was multiple VAR checks and those goals, and all came back fine. So we'll see.
Yeah. So I did want to note that City just won the UEFA Super Cup yesterday, as we record on a Thursday. They went to penalties versus Sevilla. And here's the interesting thing. Now, they only made one substitute. So that means Haaland, Grealish, Foden, Rodri, Kovacic, Walker, Akanji, Ake, Vardiol, they went full 90. And that was really less than a week after Haaland, Palmer, Rodri, Foden, Walker, Ake, Akanji, and Vardiol all appeared in their first match last Friday. And now, as you know, De Bruyne is out. The only change they made was Alvarez, who came in the 85th minute for Palmer. And I was like, that's a lot of football to be played just days before, to me, this match. This is a six-pointer. Like, I know it's early in the season, but these are two teams that could be going hammer and tong throughout the entire season. We very well may be the team that puts up enough fight against City that maybe somebody like Arsenal might be able to win the league. I don't know. I don't know how it works, but we could be the ones that beat City, whereas Liverpool and Arsenal might not be able to figure it out just because of the way that we're set up.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's a good point for sure. I knew that they had played. I was watching that game and did not really realize that everyone had played so many minutes this early in the season too. Don't forget that. I mean,
It's silly.
You know, it's. I mean, we're not the ones getting paid to do this. We don't even get paid for this podcast anymore. So
yeah,
We really don't. Yeah, well, okay, sure. We can be ambitious. All right, what you got? What else you got?
Do you want to go history?
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Okay. From the website 11v11.com, I looked up all-time Newcastle United versus Manchester City. The first one I looked at was from like the 1800s, and I think I went over that one last year. What I wanted to do was go over the last time we beat Manchester City. That was on 29 January 2019. That was at St. James's Park in front of 50,861 in attendance. And kickoff was at 8 p.m. This was Newcastle United's first win in their last 23 games in the Premier League against Manchester City. They had lost 19 of those 23 and drew the rest. It ended the Magpies' longest winless run and City's longest unbeaten run against an opponent in that division. Let's see. So Rafa was the manager that day. Pep was the manager that day. You had goals from Solomon Rondon and Matt Ritchie with a penalty in the 80th. But Sergio Aguero got the first minute goal. And I remember this. He made it look like, oh, man, this is going to be easy street for the visitors.
Oh, yeah.
The lineup for City that day, Ederson, Danilo, Laporta, Kyle Walker, Fernandinho, John Stones, David Silva, Kevin De Bruyne, Leroy Sané, Raheem Sterling, and Sergio Aguero. Bernardo Silva came on for De Bruyne. Gabriel Jesus came on for Sané. And Ilkay Gundogan came on for Danilo. On the field for Newcastle United that day was Dubravka in between the pipes, Jamal Lascelles, Lejeune, Shar, Yedlin. Isaac Hayden playing that holding mid. Christian Atsu, bless his heart, lost him. Matt Ritchie, Sean Longstaff, Ayoze Perez, and Solomon Rondon up top. Kennedy came in for Atsu in the 87th, and Javi Manquillo came in for Perez in the 90th.
Yeah. Do you know what else was significant about that game? It's not going to be on your 11v11 thing. This is your social update. That was the infamous sit-in v City, where Newcastle fans were so fed up with Mike Ashley and his lack of spending, because I think that was the season that I think we made no signings in the summer, which was. And then I think we brought in Kennedy on loan. That was our signing for the summer. We just brought him in on loan again. And fans were fed up because, again, like you said, longest winless streak for Newcastle in club history. I think at that point, up until potentially probably the Bruce era. And then, so there were fans had organized a sit-in where they were going to not leave the match against Man City. It was a nationally televised match. And it was going to be this big protest. Our friend Graham Bell actually did the sit-in. He was there. One small flaw with the sit-in v City is that two things. The day before, it was announced Newcastle were going to break their transfer record for one Miguel Almiron. That came out literally the day before. So, all right, already the whole reason you're doing the sit-in kind of gets thrown out the window. Yeah. And then on top of that, you pick up a result against Manchester City. And so the sit-in, if you type this in online, the sit-in v City pictures, it's like 15 guys in the upper deck with a banner. It's like the saddest thing. And I love Graham, but it was just like, and he was so annoyed that like, because he's a guy who's going to stick by his word. Because
it's the cruel irony of the universe is against you.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like literally like it was a party in Newcastle that night, and people almost forgot. They forgot about,
and they were, you know, the 15 party poopers up in the second level.
Yeah, and it's like, and the unfortunate part is like ultimately like those 15 party poopers were right, and that ended up being one of the only moves. It's not the only move we made. And Mickey was fine, but again, probably like not the most exciting, or he was a little bit disappointing for where we were. And then, of course, like that summer, we lose Rafa. We saw Ozzy Perez. It's, yeah, it was that's when Bruce comes in. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yuck.
Yep. Yeah. Then COVID happened. So fun social triple stuff that yuck. We talked about. All right, let's move on to who to look out for. Besides the obvious Erling Haaland. So we're removing Haaland from this equation. Give me your player that we should be paying attention to on the Man City side.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting is I also have Phil Foden in my fantasy team. And I think that with, you know, Phil Foden may be a really dangerous. He didn't have the best first week, but that may give him the impetus to have a really positive, impactful second week. Now, in this first game in the league, he played as part of the midfield three. And then in midweek in the UEFA Super Cup, he played up top as sort of the attacking three. So he's pretty dynamic, but he's played, I think, played left-sided both matches. So I would expect him to be a positive and impactful player for City. And I think probably to because he had some good grace. He had some beautiful moments on the ball. He's a good player.
Great player.
And I think he just wasn't as impactful as he would have liked to have been. I think he can be really influential. And I also think Alvarez might be someone to watch out for. But I'm going to say Phil Foden is my guy to watch out for this week.
Yeah. I think Phil Foden's a good shout. I'm actually going to go similar direction in the sense of like young player, from their academy, or kind of, the guy who has a black dad, but doesn't look like it. Cole Palmer, who looked really good. He's looked good so far, but he looked really good in the UEFA Super Cup. Probably one of the better players, and seems like he's kind of being thrusted and handed the reins for, you know, to not to be the like for like replacement. I don't want to say that, but just I don't know. He looked good in kind of that central midfield creative role, kind of out wide interchange with Foden. Him and Grealish, like the attack was pretty solid against Sevilla. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's Sevilla, they were tough to break down. So give him the benefit of the doubt. And then in the Burnley match, I know he also played a little bit in that. And I think so. Yeah, he played a little bit in that. It looked okay. But I think he seems like he might be a part of the solution for Man City to solve the De Bruyne issue until they bring in another, you know, midfielder that could be good. Like, again, they've been linked to Paqueta, or I don't know how to say his name, as well. So that's potential for them. I know Jeremy Doku, someone that they're looking at as well. So yeah, anyway, that's who I've got.
Yeah, no, it's going to be a fun game.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun game. What do you think the result's going to be?
I think we get a draw. Honestly, I think we can go there. I think we can get a 2-2.
Okay, I'm going to go 2-0 loss. I still think Manchester City is really good. Yeah. I think Newcastle's good too, for sure. But Newcastle carried their weight when we played them at St. James's last year. It was a very fun and entertaining draw, probably one of the most fun matches to watch of the season. But when we went to the Etihad, it wasn't the same. It wasn't as close. And I think that could be the case here again. You know, I'm not going to be surprised if Newcastle, you know, even win away at the Etihad. But it's still a somewhat tough environment to play in. And, again, they still are a really good team. De Bruyne or not, it's a good team with a literal robot machine-like Terminator at striker who needs half a chance to score a hat trick. Like, so I think that's the tough thing is that.
Yeah, they're going to score goals. Just,
yeah.
I think that we've got I think Newcastle's got the best defense in the league.
I agree.
But it's like a rock and a hard place, right? Like City's got the best, to me, they've got the best offense in the league and they're bound to score goals. But I don't, from what I saw, I just feel like they're vulnerable. And I know that they're going to get theirs, but I feel like we could get ours. And so, yeah, don't be surprised if if we don't come through, you know, we should come through with a couple of goals from this game. I think it's going to, I think this one could surprise the media. I think that people are going to write Newcastle off on this one.
I don't know. I think the media are drinking the Kool-Aid, and I think that there's going to be a lot of people who are predicting Newcastle to go into, especially with how disappointed people have been with Man City so far. Again, a team that has not lost a competitive match this season, but somehow are still disappointed. I think that they're going to be like, oh, well, you just saw what Newcastle did to Villa. So, I wouldn't be surprised to come into Man City and beat them 2-0. Like, there's going to be a lot of that, but in a British accent, unless it's Tim Howard. I'll say 2-1. I think we'll score one. There you go.
Okay.
We're going to lose.
It's, got it. You're not. You're probably more likely, but I'm going to stick with my draw, and this season I'm going to be less negative. I think I'm going
to
be.
Oh no! See, I have to be more negative. I think I will say on the predictions, I think I'm going to be a little bit more negative. Until I'm like completely bought in that new. There's certain teams that I'm like, okay, we're gonna be fine against. But I think anyone in the big six, maybe not Tottenham, maybe not Chelsea either. Oh, we'll see. Right now, until I'm proven wrong, anyone in the big six, I'm gonna really think about it and not just default to Newcastle winning. Everyone else, I probably will default to Newcastle winning. So yeah, that's my commitment this season, for sure. All right. Cool. Well, I think that's it for this week's episode of CHN Radio. I'm probably not going to edit this. I'm going to edit it. I'm not going to split it in two. So you got a longer episode. I don't know. That's been an episode of CHN Radio. I'm Elijah. That's Josh. Make sure that you subscribe to us. Check us out on the Twitters. Check us out on the Instas. All that kind of good stuff. Hoey the lads. And we on this case, looking at the old time bridge, I'm coming home, Newcastle. I might as well have been in jail. I'd walk the streets all day. I'll need for a bottle of your own brown ale. I'm coming home, Newcastle. If you never win the cup again, I'll brave the dark at St. James's Park if the Gallagher's end in the rain. I'm coming home to be a Geordie and to live in Geordie land. Some people think we're bawdy and we're hard to understand, and they say it's just self-pity and we're not so very tough, cause the people in the big fat city haven't had it tough as rough. I'm coming home, Newcastle. You can keep your London wedding. I'd walk the streets all day. I'll meet for a bottle of the River Tyne. I'm coming home, Newcastle. I wish I'd never been away. I'd kiss the ground for the welcome sound of me mother saying, "Hinny, how we? I'm coming home." And I miss the old blind busker who stands at Fenwick's door. He plays a mean accordion. You've all seen him there before. And I love the Geordie heroes. There's so many famous names like Lindisfarne in Gaza, Brendan Foster in the Gateshead Games. I'm coming home, Newcastle. I might as well have been in jail. I'd walk the streets all day. I'll need for a bottle of your own brown ale. I'm coming home, Newcastle. If you never win the cup again, I'll brave the dark at St. James's Park at the Gallagher's end in the rain. I'm coming home, Newcastle. You can keep your London wang. I'd walk the streets all day. I'll meet for a bottle of the River Tyne. I'm coming home, Newcastle. I wish I'd never been away. I'd kiss the ground for the welcome sound of me mother saying, "Hinny, how we?" I'm coming home, Newcastle. I might as well have been in jail. I'd walk the streets all day. I'll meet for a bottle of your own brown ale. I'm coming home, Newcastle. If you never win the cup again, I'll brave the dark at St. James's Park at the Gallagher's end in the rain. I'm